Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and I would like to welcome to honorary day of October in November, Michael Kester.
Hey, thanks. Happy to be here. Also, I'll be really honest, happy October's over.
Oh, are you?
Well,
I told you 5 shows ago to stop eating that fucking candy corn. And now look at you.
Well, yeah.
Look at
Dude,
you.
And now I've got fucking 5 boxes of blueberries still on my counter.
Yeah.
Serious.
I told you this was going to be terrible for you. And what did you do?
No, what I mean, I just, so the thing that I think it's going to be so fucking fun every year, I'm going to do, watch a fucking horror movie every fucking day.
Anytime you you say out loud a thing you're about to do, it turns into a chore immediately.
And I know. And
you just can't acknowledge you're doing anything.
The thing that sucks is I watch so many movies for this and just in real life all the time. And then to be like, and on top of that, why not one more film per day, every day for the next 31 days?
Yeah, I don't know how you keep up with that. What's going to happen is you're going to crash and burn. You're never going to want to go to a theater, and it's going to take you like 4
because the best thing is when I get to justify going to a theater for one of these. But also, I think I have an idea. I think I'm going to change my rule book for next year, but we'll talk about that at the end of this show. This is an additional content.
No, this is a regular
double feature.
I already told you. I'm telling you right now.
You switched it?
I'm switching.
Switching it.
No, regular show, then additional content. Look, we're recording this on the same day.
I'm sorry.
Look, you get 2 episodes for the price of, well, whatever it costs to be on Patreon.
Yeah.
For the price of, wait a second, there is a price. But this is the one we're including as part of October.
Okay, well then I'll talk about the 31 days thing on more on the AC. But today we're going to talk about one of the films, actually, to poignant point you made, one of the films I got to write off. Basically, it feels like a write off.
Yeah, right.
As a 31 days film. Actually, 2 films. Both of these films were 31 days films for me because I hadn't seen either one. It's the glory of post-Palooza living.
Jigsaw, 2017, and Cult of Chucky, 2017.
That's right.
Yes. Month of October films.
One of these films is still in the theater.
It is. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Cult of Chucky was in the theater for about the about 10 minutes shorter than the entire runtime of Cult of Chucky.
Right.
Which sucks because that thing should way still be in the theater.
I know.
I don't know what the fuck
I don't know what's going on with that franchise, man. It's just baffling to me.
Well, the fact they're still getting them made somehow makes me so happy.
Well, and the other thing,
you know, that could, it's very close to that not happening at all. So if it happens and it goes to a theater for a special screening with Q&A one time and then no more, that's okay.
I'm fascinated by the fact that part of the canon of the Saw films is released in the theater.
That's just canonical,
but just has no bearing because
so unnecessary.
It's not a dig to the movie we're going to cover today, but we are going to spoil that movie. We're going to spoil both of these super hard.
Yes, yes.
And it's not a dig to that, but I mean, just like, it feels like the Saw movies just require a theatrical presentation. And for some reason, Lionsgate is like, yeah, of course. They just come out in theaters.
Because if it's October, it must be Saw, Michael.
Right. Exactly.
But if it's Saw, must it be October?
Ooh, I don't know.
But that's the very hypothesis we are pressing on today. So we'll find out. We'll do Jigsaw first.
So halfway through, we'll be talking about
Cult of Chucky,
but multiple Chuckies.
Ah, spoiler. So many spoilers. Can I tell you about my Jigsaw nightmare?
Okay.
I bought so many tickets to this movie. So I know I just got to talk about the great Hannibal's Brian Fuller the other day, other week, other show, whenever the fuck that was. But I'd like to tell a very transparent story so that you understand the snapshot in time, my stature in Hollywood, California, as a director and producer of such great films as 31 and another one that, where the fuck is that movie? Where is it? Seriously, why is that not out yet? Did it even exist? did I dream it all in my mind? Director's cut. So my producing partner on a lot of this stuff, who produced the double feature movie and did my makeup at the LA stuff, that's on patreon.com/double feature. That's a movie set in the world of double feature.
Where double feature exists.
Which is, yeah, which is also this world. Yeah. It's a little confusing, right. But you'll get it.
Right.
Anyways.
Yeah. It's not your world. If you take your headphones off right now, it doesn't take place in that world.
Right, right, right. Only while the show is going. So if you want to queue up the show and then put the movie on in front of you, whatever.
It does that for you. You don't have to.
Free for you. Yeah. All right. So Sheila is doing so many cool things that I can never talk about. But one of the things she did was the promotional campaign, which also I don't understand at all. The He Is Everyone campaign. We'll get to that. For Saw. Because, you know, everyone is Jigsaw.
I guess.
I mean, I watch the movies. Everyone is Jigsaw. That's sort of the convoluted nature of these movies. So she did this great makeup where they kind of put the, you know, the doll makeup on the actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's all flaky and crusty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's all her work. It's great.
Yeah.
So we go to this red carpet. I score some tickets through Lionsgate. They're like, hey, come to our thing. They're very nice to send us tickets. Send me a plus one. Of course, Sheila's going to go. We go to this thing. It's in Hollywood. It's the crazy longest line for anything I've ever seen in my life. Tobin Bell's on the red carpet. He's giving an interview. Everybody's schmoozing. It's great. We're standing in line.
The dolls show up.
The dolls showed up with the red eyes. Red eye doll and original doll were both there holding hands.
Was Kicksaw there?
Very controversial. Kicksaw was not there. Kicksaw cannot be found. No one can find Kicksaw. I've tried for 2 days of my life at some point. No one can find Kicksaw. So we're standing in line. They start letting people in. We're getting all pumped. We're going to see Saw in a theater. Bousman's there. Everybody's there. Holy fuck. We're walking past. There's a giant banner, which is this giant makeup that Sheila did, standing, you know, right in front of this thing as everybody's queuing in. It's like two stories tall. And this dude in a suit goes, okay, hold on right here. And then he gets on his walkie. And the line just kind of stopped at us. We're like, what the fuck is going on here? Now, I didn't do anything wrong. Sheila hasn't done anything wrong, but it feels like we're being stopped by security or something. So anyways, guy comes back and just everything's kind of died down outside. People are queuing up inside. And he goes, yeah, we're out of room. So there's just no more room. And then he walks away. And so us and the four people still in line behind us are kind of just like, well, what does that mean? And we talked amongst ourselves. They're sort of breaking everything down behind us. Guy comes back up a couple minutes later. He's like, that means you have to go home. You have to go back to your home. You can't go into this theater. And she was just like, but I, meanwhile, they're like breaking down her billboard behind the guy. It was just such this epic moment where we were basically kicked out of a movie that Sheila actually worked on.
Jesus.
That's great. So that's where I exist right now. That's my infamy. That's my level of stature that I can get invited, us into a thing that I can get us into a line of a thing we'll be sent home for.
Cool.
That was the first of many times, but I did eventually get to see Jigsaw.
That's good.
So let's start at this campaign. This whole Jigsaw is everyone thing. I want to know what the plot of this movie is to people who are going to see this movie.
Okay, so let's leave that linger.
Okay.
And dial back to a few years ago when Saw 3D came out in the theater and Lionsgate definitively ended the franchise.
Oh, with that giant like 20-story Tobin Bell that didn't exist anywhere in the movie?
Right.
You mean that one?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So they end the franchise in, I believe both you and I agreed on the Killapalooza, a very good place.
Mm-hmm.
Lionsgate goes, that's it. We're done. If it's October, it won't be Saw, that kind of shit.
Right. No one say that anymore.
And they said, you know, we'll be happy to pick up the Saw franchise when the right script lands in front of us. And time goes on, time passes.
When the right
ambitious human after ambitious human after ambitious human is writing what I'm sure is just fan service over fucking producer schlob knobbing over just all these scripts landing on the fucking desks of Lionsgate. And then comes along the guys who wrote Saw Legacy, now named Jigsaw, and they read the script and went, this seems exactly like the other franchise movies. Let's bring it back. This is the one, guys.
Uh-huh.
So to answer your question, the ad campaign for the film, to me, feels a lot like The Purge, because it's going, so this is in a world where anyone can be Jigsaw and this happens and everyone's Jigsaw, and then it goes, but we're not going to touch on that too much.
Yeah, I just don't really even know what that means at all.
World.
Like, what do people think this is a movie about when they go to see it?
I'll tell you what I thought. It's funny because both of these films beg the same idea and neither of them deliver that idea. I assumed that this was going to be about kind of a united cult of copycat Jigsaws who all kind of, and patent pending, trademark, fuck all of you, this is intellectual property, where all of these people kind of simultaneously set off Jigsaw traps all over the country and create pandemonium because there's just hundreds of traps all simultaneously running.
You've decided to just give away the Jigsaw script you submitted.
Right.
That they declined, yeah.
And ultimately, there's just some pandemonium and it's just people going, oh my God, this Jigsaw thing is expanded beyond. It was one guy and then it was copycats. And now it is a cult of copycats who all worship at the altar of John Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that. It's actually just Jigsaw making traps and trapping people. It is in classic. This is okay. So it again sounds kind of like I'm complaining, but what I'm really happy with about this movie is how neatly it fits into the franchise.
Yeah, it almost seems to me like it's funny, they created this problem for themselves, and it seems like this is just a real elaborate way to try and find their way out of that problem, where they go, we really, really want Tobin Bell. Let's devise this.
Sure. Well, you need John Kramer.
Whole elaborate thing in order to somehow get him to be Jigsaw in the movie when we killed him.
Well, it's funny because it's kind of the only other way in which you can remember when we did Killapalooza 1?
Yes.
And we were talking about the amazing thing that is the first film, because the ending feels like a twist because of the legacy of the franchise, when in reality, when it came out, there was no twist.
Yeah.
This movie kind of generates a similar thing where when John Kramer pulls his hood off and he's not dead, you just go, holy shit, what do you mean he's not fucking dead?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go, no, he's dead. He's dead. We didn't say he wasn't dead. We just said he's here.
Right. Yeah. We didn't say he wasn't dead. He's just here.
It's, yes. I mean, you know, it's Saw. So you can, if you're, my fucking keen eye is turned on in the Saw movie. So you can't trick me with writing like this.
Oh, Michael will not be tricked by Saw twists.
Well, it's not that. It's just that I'm so tuned in when I'm watching these movies that anything that comes, you know, the key to your salvation, I'm like, that's a key. There's a key in there. There's a key in there. The in that shotgun shell, there's a key inside
so
of it.
Funny. It's so, so funny. It does actually take, it can get so easily overlooked, but it does take attention to really keep the amount of, I don't know how to say it politely, but just idiotic bad Jigsaw poetry traps, where he just, every sentence is like, in order to solve his traps, you need to misconstrue his sentences because that's how he means them to be taken.
But sometimes they're literal and those are the most perilous sentences.
right. Yeah.
Like when he goes, the thing that's amazing is the very first trap where he's like, an offering of blood, no matter how small. And she's like, wait, I have it. We need to offer an amount of blood, no matter how small.
Right. Well, they're learning what level of poetry is really, it's really going on there.
But one of the other things that this, one of my other favorite canonical Saw things that this movie just, I mean, is amazing for, in all these movies, but this movie in particular, is how fucking airtight it is by the end. Because again, so like, while, like I said, on one hand, I'm always keenly trying to decode the John Kramer Jigsaw puzzle, like speech.
Uh-huh.
I'm also super capable of just sitting back and just watching a whirlwind of confusing plot and just being like, I can guarantee you this will all make sense by the end.
Yeah.
I can turn to everyone in the room and be like, this all seems crazy now, but trust me, it's going to be air fucking tight.
Well, that's the thing, is if Saw doesn't get more convoluted every installment, yeah, I'm almost disappointed.
It's just amazing because it wraps up. And I mean, a movie like Jigsaw, this film should have plot holes, and I'm sure it does, but not in any of the places where you'd expect them to be.
Yeah.
Because it's just random shit that they just go. And I feel like in the creation of this film, they just go, what would be interesting? What would keep people guessing? How do we like kind of ham fist some more violence and gore into this? Why is this that way? Why and such and such? And then they go, okay, so this is the corner we've painted ourselves into. So we now need a string of whatever devices to kind of patch everything up. And then we're all set. You go like, and the thing that's really funny is I was explaining this to somebody that I went and saw the movie with, and they mentioned, well, they kind of over-explain it, because why did he have to recreate the trap 10 years later with three other bodies? And I was like, no, they have to do that because some keen-eyed motherfucker is going to go, the blood was fresh, the bodies would be rotten. You know, there's and I'm like, no, they just, I mean, there's absolutely no reason other than to like pad their airtight plot here.
Yeah.
But that's why they do it.
Well, Saw to me, from the very first one, you know, they did this thing in the first one where they then trapped themselves in the rest of the films where they had a twist and people went, oh, the fucking twist, you won't believe.
Well,
and so every time they feel like they need to one up that.
It has to be a twist that is accompanied by an exceptionally indulgent Charlie Clouser swell.
Yeah, right. Man, the Charlie Clouser, they, the price on that is just, you can put no price on how you could have made this movie for $25. And once you pop that Clouser score in there, you go, well, okay, I could see how it got into a theater.
Yeah,
it's expensive enough to be listen to that score, I mean, man. It's so like
I'm fairly certain like the IMDb page of this film is all just like, it's just the stock IMDb no face image next to everyone except Tobin Bell.
Yeah, right. So fucking funny. Yeah, I think that, you know, you start with the other thing that's great about the first Saw twist is it's very minimalistic and it's very like smack you because it's been really under your nose the whole time.
Yeah. It's also,
I mean, almost worse than anything.
Literally.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I mean. It's just right. And it's pasted somewhere on the screen in every frame of the movie.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, fuck you guys.
It's also the least airtight twist in the franchise.
No, it is. It is. But as things get crazier and they have like the, spoiler dueling timelines of this movie, I feel like they get to the end of what could be that really clean minimalistic thing, and then they go, you know, that has like 50 plot holes, well, bring in a crew and start patching them. How do we fill up they create 30 minutes of beautiful minimalism and then an hour of patching all of the holes in there, their idea,
totally,
which is just so funny.
And
so funny,
it's also interesting too, because with all of these Saw movies, they always end with me asking the same broad question, which is, how the fuck are you going to do another one of these?
Yeah.
Because the thing that they must know by now, I hope they know by, they seem to know by now, is that the characters who are picking up the mantle of Jigsaw as this franchise goes on become less and less charismatic and enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they know Tobin Bell is the definitive, you know, John Kramer is the definitive character, but we were all totally kind of on board with Amanda
when
she picked it up. And then if you're me, you're still kind of down with Hoffman because at least he was in the first movie.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of, you know, his wife is doing some shit. And then that's why I always said that the seventh movie is such a great definitive ending, and I'm not going to spoil it here, but they really go and give you, they give you a version of Jigsaw that feels like a pedestal version. It's like, it feels like if there's anybody other than John Kramer, it's got to be, you know, this situation.
Yeah.
And now they're going, actually, maybe it's like a surgeon who was in the military. Ooh, who's this guy? Who's this cute guy who's coming in jigsawing up in here?
Yeah.
Ooh, I hope we get more of this guy. And I'm like, I would much rather it be almost anyone else in this film than this guy.
Can we get that barrel of hay from the last 40 right? minutes? Of
yeah.
The, what? Why is this movie in a barn?
That's so weird.
This is well, such no, a strange that's the thing, Saw though. Film.
It, but no, here's the thing that's great about that. I thought about that too, because I goes, why is, I was thinking the same thing. I just go, why is this in the Old West? And I feel like the frantic straw grabbing,
so to speak,
of writing for this franchise, they probably went, well, where is this all going to take place? And then somebody went, I don't know. And somebody else goes,
Michael,
well,
where do we get so much straw?
Well, it's not about that. It's about, what do we draw on a lot? What is the imagery of this franchise? And they go, well, there's that thing where the fucking pig faces steal people.
Yeah.
In the third movie, they like sawed up all those pig carcasses. And so like, where's he getting all these pigs? Like, it feels like they go, so his wife owns a pig farm and that's where all the pig stuff comes from. And you go, oh shit, I guess that makes a lot of sense. So natural progression is when my film Jigsaw Universe comes out and it's about the, you know, the big mass Jigsaw event all happening simultaneously. It'll all be tracked back to a tiny mini DV factory where he gets all the little tapes.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That's his family's
his micro
business.
Cassette.
Yeah. Micro cassette and recorders. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's, they have like an electronics store. His uncle Jed Kramer runs a Radio Shack.
It's weird to watch this and know that everybody in the audience is thinking about franchise development. It's just such a strange spot we're in with movies.
Nobody
now.
Cares. It's
mostly Marvel's fault, I think, that all audiences watch it. And I don't know if you would, I have no idea what the reviews of this movie say, but I bet they all mention where the movies could go and trying to hand off the torch. And everyone's sitting there not evaluating a film, but evaluating a production plan for the pipeline for future Jigsaw success.
I mean, films,
which is really weird.
We've seen this in sequel culture with film, and this is a good place to talk about it when we're talking about the sequels after what we had thought were definitive franchises. But we've seen with sequel culture that people who consume, like media consumers, are leaning heavily toward television type releases. Mm-hmm. You know, people want sequels, people want long arcing stories, people want, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a perfect example. They want timelines crossing over. They want references to other shit. You know, this is something you and I have known for fucking 10 years.
Yeah.
What you want is to watch something and have somebody 10 films in go, we love premarital sex, and validate all the time you've wasted.
Yeah, right. Right. That's what it is. That's how we, I should just say they saved the best effect shot for last. I guess there's nothing for me to really add to that other than I just want somebody to mark out that head split open thing with the spurting. Ugh. It was wonderful.
My favorite trap in the film, not that we're keeping track, is definitely, it's the second portion of the silo trap when it stops dropping corn kernels and just starts.
Thank you. I'm glad we also mentioned that, because I was sitting in the theater with my arms crossed going, this is so absurd.
I was in the theater doing the same thing.
Who is just
anytime, anytime something dropped, my hands would go up and like,
I was the only one watching this like a horror fan. Where every time I went, and everyone around me is just like, what are they doing in this grain silo? Like,
you guys, it might hit them in the face, though. Look out. There's saw blades falling from this grain silo.
Saw has always been a celebration of, you know, special effects and what we can create as human beings in just the most twisted, unnecessary environments. Right. And I've always loved it for that. Cult of Chucky is my favorite thing in the universe.
Speaking of what you just said, the Chucky films have also been a celebration of special effects and things that people can create without CGI.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Not exclusively, but I mean, the thing, Don Mancini, the champion of this franchise, has made I mean, the two things, and we've talked about this before, we've talked about a lot of this in Curse of Chucky, but the only two things that this Child's Play franchise needs to say to get people on board is still an actual puppet, still Brad Dourif.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that these movies can hold on just right off the back of Jigsaw, and while we're thinking about all these other slasher movies. I mean, for so long, we basically just said, keep the franchise going.
Yeah.
Just there's no reason to stop or reboot or, but there's
yeah,
a kind
both of,
of
these films do that. Yeah.
There's a kind of cash grab about reboots that essentially, here's what happens every fucking time. They go, why don't we sell this franchise out to restart it and grab a bigger audience? Because people by the ninth installment are off the boat. They're old. They're what, as if 30-year-olds don't go to the theater, right?
Yeah, but 30-year-olds don't buy fucking lunchboxes.
Well, I don't know about that. Not today's 30. Today's 30-year-olds right. are the only people right. buying lunchboxes. Right. No, but I mean, you know, they want to take a property that has name value, but they want to open it up to mm-hmm. to re-include a dwindling fan yeah. base.
Well, I
to
mean,
re-up
that's the,
on that.
That's the thing about, you're right. That's because what it is by Nightmare on Elm Street 5, people know what Nightmare on Elm Street is. But imagine if the first one already had the legacy preceding it.
Right. Well, you know? And also by 6 and by 7 and by 8, diminishing returns.
Right.
So you
exactly.
want to go, okay, scoop in the new people, start over what something like It is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen time and time again with the longer running franchises is we covered the, so when we did the Killapaloozas, the 31 and 32,
yeah.
and we covered this sort of reboot, reimagine, let's start the franchise over. We discovered that some are bad, yeah, but some are incredible mm-hmm. and neither work. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Just across the board, the one thing we didn't cover is zero of them work. Nobody cares about any of them. And that sucks. But every time, you know, this plan, and we even addressed it a little bit on there, like, why do people keep thinking this is a good idea? And then Cult of Chucky, you know, it's really, I mean, Jigsaw tries to like do some handoffs and stuff. Cult of Chucky just doubles down on like, oh yeah, where could the story go? More actors you've already seen. Who else mm-hmm. should we invite? People who have already been invited. You know, double, triple, quadruple, quintuple fucking down on story you have already seen.
Right.
It yeah. is the most fan service franchise of any of the ones we've done. I can't
and
believe
the thing-
it.
The thing that's amazing about this franchise and kind of the resurfacing with Curse of Chucky and Cult of Chucky is that I think Don Mancini managed to tap into the one way of making this successful outside of the perfect storm of luck that was It, which is he's got this fucking doll, man. People know Chucky. People may have never seen a Child's Play movie, but they know you see the doll, you know Chucky. And Don Mancini goes, I'm going to make a movie. The people who have been on board since 1988 are already on board. And all I got to do is make sure it fucking lands on the front page of Netflix when it comes out. Because people are going to see that doll and they're going to go, ooh, it's October. Let's watch a spooky movie. Hey, that new Chucky movie came out. And then he does the unthinkable, which is, but also it can't suck.
Yeah.
That's the other hard part. That's the thing that most people forget about.
Good at this.
That's the thing most people forget about is that it's not good enough to get them to hit play on their fucking, you know, new releases on Netflix on the front page.
Yeah.
They have to actually enjoy watching it at that point. That's the most difficult thing about the, you know, VOD home video medium now is that people's attention span is so fragile that if somebody turns something on, they can hit two buttons and be watching something they're enjoying better.
I'm amazed how much of a story worth telling they have in this.
Mm-hmm.
It is so interesting to me, even before they get into what seems to, I mean, before the movie kind of takes its turn into where it wants to go later, just the story of what happens after the fallout of a movie like mm-hmm. It reminds me of Halloween 2 in the yeah. hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, all that stuff had an impact. Let's not just flash forward to way later or abandon
or jump
the characters.
To a different group. Yeah.
You know, you basically pick up and go, there are repercussions And here they are. And the story of dealing with the repercussions is a story itself. And then to reintroduce Chucky and basically go, what if he fucks with recovering from this? What if it's not like H2O and the scars have mostly healed, but they'll always be there, and then we poke at it again? It's really just, it almost picks up where the last one leaves off, like step after step. It just goes, okay, well, we've barely gotten life back together. Chucky is still out for you after this.
Well, that's the other thing too that I love about it, is that it sets up Chucky as taking the previous film personally.
How do you mean?
Well, because, you know, the best force of the original trilogy is that Chucky is out to get Andy.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
It's about getting Andy. And then at some point he realizes, I don't need Andy. It's the third movie is when he realizes Chucky's going to be a bro. And then after that, he kind of becomes this rampant, you know, waifish type force that just goes around the country in a fucking Cadillac and stabs everybody. That's like the next two movies.
Sure, sure.
And then Curse of Chucky happens. And at the end of Curse of Chucky, there's actually another thing that you never see in these franchises, which is a turn in the villain where he goes, I'm done just chasing murder. I'm going to make this girl's life miserable.
Yeah, yeah.
She fucked me up, and now I'm going to make it bad for her.
It basically becomes like torture.
Yeah, well, he's taken the events of the previous film personally, and his motivation is no longer just to be a rampant killing machine. It's to be a calculated spur in her side.
This is development in the killer, who, by the way, is a doll.
Right.
I mean, it blows my mind, man. I just can't. It's been such a like personally gratifying thing for me as we've invested in these different movies over the last 10 years and really taken a look at, you know, where they come from and the different decisions they make and what works and what doesn't, what should have worked and just doesn't take off and what does. It's been a study of the zeitgeist, just all sorts of areas of filmmaking, why something picks up, why it doesn't gain traction. And for Chucky to dig its heels in and really do its own thing, just really... Don Mancini is the kind of person, you know, when I was watching Jigsaw, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to watch this and I'm going to personally evaluate how I feel it fits into Saw. And about halfway through Cult of Chucky, it does the thing you used to talk about with Billy Corgan, that sort of thing where I go, Don Mancini knows what he's doing. This film is not playing defense like every other franchise is doing today, where they're going, hey, see this one. I think you're going to like it. You know, the fans will tell us whatever. Don Mancini walks up confidently and goes, I'm going to tell you a story. And you just have to go with whatever crazy story he wants to tell.
Yeah.
There isn't a place for the audience to go, well, I believe that was the wrong thing to do here.
Sure.
It's just got too much detail and it's too interesting for it to be evaluated that way. It's just more an art piece that happens to you. That is so fucking impressive, especially today.
I know.
Especially in something this many chapters in.
Especially on
this
fucking seventh movie, yeah.
I know. Oh, I know. There's no better example of this, I think, than... I mean, spoilers. Fucking see this movie, please. I don't want to ruin all the stuff from this movie. But this has always been a spoiler-inclusive show. This today, especially for some reason, I just don't want to like... touch any of the spoilers. But where they go with Fiona Driff is, I never would have even thought to ask for this, you know?
You mean have Fiona Driff do an impression of her father?
Yeah. What, you want to talk about fucking torch passing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I never would have thought, take this, when we go, okay, the final girl, where does the final girl go? In evaluating 100 of these films, in scrutinizing them, I should say, and really looking at what they're doing and where they could go. And very often on these franchises, we've thought about, well, where might the franchise lead? Like I said, they kind of beg for that. Very rarely have we ever gone, well, what if our final girl becomes the slasher?
Mm-hmm.
And then to spend the later part of the last movie dealing with the torment, and then this movie about recovery from the torment, and then to take that turn. And I mean, I know this, it's not a very objective thing. Of course, it's very subjective. But for me, I watch it and I am just in love with her mad Brad Dourif impression. Sure. I could watch it for seven movies.
The other thing that's amazing is this film picks a side, which is, it picks a side on an ongoing battle that you and I talk about all the time in these franchises, which is we're constantly going, well, obviously Jason can't win, but I also don't want to see him lose.
Yeah.
You know, the only way I'm okay watching fucking the Leprechaun die is because I know that we still have two more of this movies today. But the last time is going to be a real bummer because you don't know if he's going to come back.
Yeah.
And this movie goes, no. Chucky flat out fucking wins. It took seven movies.
Yeah.
But he wins. I mean, he's a bad guy. He loses for a while.
But his head still gets tortured.
Sure.
It's like that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, especially this franchise, I feel like there are so many, you know, the people in the other franchises, rarely do we get somebody who sticks out like a Heather, you know. Mm-hmm. We don't get that very often. And from Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's a couple characters here or there, or a notable final girl, a Jamie Lee Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I know everybody in the Chucky franchise. And yeah. I don't even watch these that often. This isn't like a yearly thing for me. I mean, some of them I've only seen the once. I think 2 and 3 I've only seen once for the end seed for Killapalooza. But I still know every single one of these characters. And they're all interesting to me.
Did you recognize the babysitter in the post-credit scene in this one too?
No, I didn't. I mean, I knew because they were so like, hey, look who it is. I'm like, oh yeah, damn, I should remember her, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
But I mean, another amazing example where they're just like, we're going to give you a character from the don't know or doesn't matter. We're only using characters from old movies. That's right. All we're doing here.
Yeah.
You know, it really goes to keep trying to do serialized and to keep that run. It's gotta be so hard as somebody who owns part of the kind of creative rights to a franchise character to escape the trap of the remake. Because everybody's gotta be going, reboot this, remake this.
Sure.
And to dodge and weave that somehow and keep making stuff and to have it be good seems really hard.
And I think there's another pitfall that he avoids, which is something that, I mean, we love about, but see in the other film we covered with Jigsaw, which is that it would also be easy for him to be like, yeah, then Chucky comes and kills a bunch of people around this one person.
Well, that's what I mean about it being a story worth telling. It's the interesting stuff happens. I shouldn't be so excited that, hey, a movie, interesting things happen in the movie. But a lot of times it's just a plot
with Chucky, not a slasher movie. It's a Chucky plot.
I think all of these characters are interesting. I think they all go strange places. Everybody has their own little funny arc. I'm still questioning what's going on with Chucky the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, damn, it does not have to be this good. It really just does not. The other thing I want to talk to you about as somebody who I can't believe
where the fuck is Glenn?
I can't believe we agreed this much on Chucky and disagree this much on Seed of Chucky.
Yeah.
But I've come to find that is very common for Child's Play fans, is there's like some kind of weird rift over Seed.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that really got me about Seed when we did it in the Killapalooza was the tone. And also, for somebody who really is like taking their continuity to heart, Seed is treated like the Jar Jar Binks of this
kind of
franchise. Yeah. They're kind of going, we're finding ways to bring all this together, but we don't really want to talk about Glenn.
I think that there's a good place now for the franchise to pick that back up.
Though. It's possible. It's on a long enough timeline. I think we'll see.
I think Andy and Glenn should team up and go after Chucky and Tiffany.
Some good stuff here.
Yeah.
You got some good stuff.
I think Glenn should pull up outside Andy's house and be like, I know you don't know who I am.
Listen, they've gone so far with these characters to even reincorporate Jennifer Tilly playing Jennifer Tilly.
Right.
As like a multiple in joke to try and like merge continuity and somehow
bring the one time they went off
and came back. Yeah. Yeah, which is a nutty thing. Well, I was going to say the thing about Seed was the tone. The tone was at the time so like Osborne's parody and so slapstick. And I think this movie, you know, this movie and the last movie, they both have a very interesting look. They're both like incredibly black and white colored, not to say hyper
contrast.
Not to say desaturated, even though there's definitely that, but they're, you know, black therapist set white. I mean, this movie more than the last, but the last one was old black gothic house and old black elevator and black stairs. And why is everything painted black? And this movie is the same kind of thing. They have that tone feels there, but I think this movie is a lot funnier. It's a lot, there's a lot more Chucky talking.
Sure.
Which certainly goes back to that.
I mean, that's by the sheer nature of how many Chuckies there are, but yeah.
Well, yeah, there's actually more Chucky talking than there even, they go, well, it's a problem because Chucky's going to talk and then it's one of those movies. Well, what if we just had two more Chuckies? You know, I don't know how that solves the problem, but it does. But I remember when we talked about the last one, how Chucky stayed quiet for a while and he didn't talk. And while that should be painful for fans of Chucky, it also did help a lot with the tone, making it scary and serious. And I remember being really happy about how once he started talking, it wasn't like totally off the rails, you know, because Chucky, especially as the movies went on, he started doing the Freddy stuff. He started really doing the like,
Chucky's going to be a bro.
He was the comic relief, but yeah, the humor wasn't always in a place that was like, it was really funny for its time and might not age well. And, you know, if you were to tell me in a vacuum 20 years ago that, you know, paint this picture of what our future looks like and then say a Chucky movie can happen and not be a disaster, seems a little, I mean, it's, listen, flat out, between you and me, Chucky seems very unlikely as today's anti-hero. There's nothing about Chucky that strikes me as like, well, clearly this is the one for today. Right. This is the one that works.
Right.
But it's just like Mancini has a shield of the world around him that, you know, none of it matters. Just tell my story. These characters could exist in any time and place and just, you know, bring the audience. Once they entered the theater, the outside world doesn't exist, just the world of Chucky. And it fucking works. And I'm just really happy about that.
Yes, it did. I think that the nature of that is
where'd you get it? Hot Topic.
I think the nature of that is kind of what I was saying about just seeing Chucky on the Netflix cover is the guardian angel to Don Mancini's franchise is that when you're hitting play, you know, it's a killer doll. You sign up for it. It's not going to be that. So if you sign up, if you hit play on Chucky the Killer Doll episode 7, and then there's a fucking killer doll, you're not going to be like, this is stupid.
Imagine the meetings though, man. Imagine the like, will audiences still believe a killer doll? How does a doll exist in the real world?
No,
the like
I know.
DC style meetings of like, how does this buffoonish thing exist in today's actual world? I don't disbelieve for a second that the Child's Play world is our world, but I also don't care at all. And I actually think the more it feels like some other world, the more I like going to it. You know, that it doesn't how do we ground Chucky again?
I'll tell you.
Isn't really at the forefront of what we care about.
I'll tell you where it feels like we live now is, do you remember, maybe 9 years ago? Let's say 10 to round it out.
No, I'm going to go with
When they were tossing around the idea of Chucky versus Ash right around the same time as Freddy versus.
Totally.
So now imagine where the Child's Play franchise has gone and where Evil Dead lives on the TV series.
Yeah.
Feels like the same world now, man.
Yeah.
It's super hyper violent, but like still grounded. It feels like they're playing, but they're not. They're still playing by some sort of rules. But if you had told me 10 years ago that 10 years from then, Evil Dead and Chucky were going to be the two most like prevalently strong you know, horror franchises that could unite, I would laugh in your fucking face. I'd be like, hell no, we'll be on Jason 25 and Freddy 11.
And not still on Jason 10.
Yeah.
we wouldn't have been in literally the same fucking spot with Jason. Mm-hmm. What a buzzkill.
Can you believe that with all the Killapalooza franchises we've done, the first two are the ones that have not had updates since we did the original Killapaloozas.
Yeah. Wow. I don't think the Nightmare on Elm Street one had come out, but I believe Friday the 13th came out shortly after when we did nothing.
It was 09. Yeah.
Longest gap in Friday the 13th history.
Mm-hmm. This year would have been the year, man. Friday the 13th in October.
I know, but you know, listen, this is all AC conversation, which we can skip on right over to. I want to talk a lot about the state of horror and all sorts of October things and 31 days. And
yeah,
this is going to be, let's just continue the show on the AC.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
I want to give a big thank you to our Patreon subscribers. As you know, I like to do at the end of the show. Sometimes I get wrapped up in how much I love Chucky that I have to stall for a moment while I pull those people up, though. You know, I mean, what would you do in that situation?
I mean, I would probably just tell you what movies we're doing next time, but you'd interrupt me.
Well, don't bother, because their names are Michael Flynn, Mark Cavett, Ross Muller, Jordan Sells, David Anderson, Charles Crawford, Ben Ecker, and Aaron Shore.
It's journey time next week, Eric.
And the Abbott.
Oh, yeah. The
Of Unreason. God. Congratulations, Don Mancini, for getting another Chucky made, man.
Good job.
Fucking congratulations to you. What a cool dude.
Congratulations, Lionsgate, for making horror movies.
Congratulations, Lionsgate, for turning your calendar to October.
It's journey time next week. We're going to talk some presidents. We're going to talk some propaganda. Name a president. Which president you want to talk about? Pick one. Pick a president from United States history. Ooh, Ronald Reagan. Good pick. So we'll do a film called The Day Reagan Was Shot, and we'll pair that with a documentary called In the Face of Evil, Reagan's War in Word and Deed, directed by Steve K. Bannon.
Who's that?
Watch more fucking film.
Bye. Ew.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.
When I went to see Saw, when I actually got to see it in the theater, when I went, I was sitting side by side with people I didn't know because the theater was packed. This has never happened to me before. Theater's packed. 100% of the seats are full. By the time the lights came up, I was the only one in the theater. Our entire audience walked out of Jigsaw. Our entire audience. It's nuts. I couldn't believe it. I mean, how can my perspective not be tainted by the entire fucking audience leaving? And one by one, not like they were all in a group, just like every couple minutes, a few people just peter off.